It is Friday, February the 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, what's known about any contact between the Trump team and Russia, including Michael Flynn, who just resigned as National Security Advisor.
It's not the $64,000 question. It's the regime existence question, or the American democracy existence question. We don't know many things. I think the transcript of what Flynn discussed with the Russian ambassador is in the hands of American authorities. I think that is true. Many other things are not known.
So ahead, what stimulates mass murderers, plus ending hidden hunger and what's trending on social media. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. President Trump met with the news media on Thursday and took issue with the way they've been covering his presidency.
Tomorrow they will say, Donald Trump rants and raves at the press. I'm not ranting and raving. I'm just telling you, you know, you're dishonest people. But, I'm not ranting and raving. I love this. I'm having a good time doing it. But tomorrow the headlines are going to be, Donald Trump rants and raves. I'm not ranting and raving.
Among the many other topics in the 75 to 90-minute press give and take, Mr. Trump dealt with a number of questions about the relationship between the Trump team and Russia.
I own nothing in Russia. I have no loans in Russia. I don't have any deals in Russia. President Putin called me up very nicely to congratulate me on the win of the election. He then called me up extremely nicely to congratulate me on the inauguration, which was terrific. But so did many other leaders, almost all other leaders from almost all other countries.
President Trump also said his ousted National Security Advisor, Michael Flynn, was just doing his job, but said he was not happy with how information about Flynn's phone call to a Russian diplomat was relayed to Vice President Mike Pence. Some have said that Flynn violated U.S. law by contacting a foreign government before Mr. Trump was inaugurated. International Edition's Lori London speaks with former Central Intelligence Agency operative Glenn Carl, who also is author of the book The Interrogator.
Flynn was fired only because the information was made public that he had been talking inappropriately, at the least, to the Russians on substance, on policy, months before Trump took office. That's it. But you won't hear that from Trump.
The outing, so to speak, of the situation with Michael Flynn's conversations, does that end the mystery of the administration's relationship to Russia?
It doesn't end it at all. It sort of elucidates for the general public a little bit of the grave crisis and situation that we don't know everything about. I have been, for a year, jumping up and down in concern, because although I am retired and sitting hundreds of miles from the center of power, the disturbing aspects of Trump's relations with Russia jumped out at me. Then I started asking questions to associates and heard long ago that the German intelligence service, the French intelligence service, the British intelligence service, and the Americans, various services, respectively, had information associating Russian intelligence with members of Trump's entourage, which might include family, certainly includes campaign surrogates and so on. It is a bit murky still. This is profoundly disturbing because that's one aspect of Russian intelligence operations, associating Russian intelligence with a presidential candidate and now the man sitting in the Oval Office. Two, we have established beyond any doubt, it's simply a fact known, that Russia also mucked around in our electoral process so as to skew the election in the favor direction it wanted, the election of Donald Trump, and so as to disaffect American with American democracy and American government, and to change our policies in a number of ways so that they would be more sympathetic to Russian objectives rather than American objectives. All of this is a profound crisis, and all of this is known.
Do we know what may have been discussed between the people from Trump campaign and Russia, and who may have actually been involved besides Michael Flynn?
It's not the $64,000 question. It's the regime existence question, or the American democracy existence question. We don't know many things. I think the transcript of what Flynn discussed with the Russian ambassador is in the hands of American authorities. I think that is true. Many other things are not known, but it appears from what we hear that there were meetings regularly. What we have been able to learn, however, even as outsiders to the intelligence and law enforcement, are that the Russians are the ones really behind most of what goes to WikiLeaks and what comes out, that it was correlated with campaign events. I'll give one specific example, but there are many. Just as the allegations of Trump and association with Russia, I think it was, came out, 2 hours later, WikiLeaks released the John Podesta emails for the Clinton campaign, diverting attention. There's a steady drip, drip, drip of leaks that went to WikiLeaks from the Russians that we have established. At the same time, those leaks correspond to events in the presidential campaign. That we know. There are allegations in the what's now called the Sterling Report, the former British intelligence officer, many of which have been substantiated now, not all, that link Russian intelligence officers with a number of Trump associates or even family members.
Do you think there is a possibility that the Trump campaign literally colluded with Russia against Hillary Clinton?
Yes, I do. I cannot prove that. And if that is wrong, we want to know that that is wrong. And certainly, if there is nothing to hide, then Donald Trump and his associates should be ardent in their desire to make sure that this is well known.
Knowing the intelligence community as you do, do you believe that whatever there is to know, we will ultimately find out?
It is possible, but intelligence operations are designed to be undetectable. It is possible we will find out everything. It's also possible that things will remain hidden and always deniable.
These conversations between his staffers and Russia, if it were to come to light that he knew that that was happening, how big of a problem would that be?
Well, I think that there's quite a real possibility, a very real possibility, that the problem is bigger than what you just asked, which is that Donald Trump himself has been in contact with Russians at some point or another. I cannot prove that. We need to find out. But even if that is not true, let's take that off the table. If members of his entourage, as the U.S. intelligence community has established, have had continued contacts with Russian intelligence, which the Russians themselves have stated publicly, frankly, those things are a grave threat to national security and would probably constitute impeachable offenses. Now, to impeach, you need to have a majority of Congress. Since the Republicans are in a majority, that's not a likely prospect. But that the president or his entourage or a candidate for the presidency and his entourage have a regular associations that they hadn't acknowledged with Russian intelligence, that strikes me as a matter of grave national security concern.
The president, during his news conference, called the whole situation with Russia a ruse.
He talked sideways every time Russia came up, but probably the most important word that came out of Mr. Trump's press conference was the word ruse. However, we need to turn it around. The essence of the conference itself clearly was a ruse to avoid focus on the central issue that should be of interest to America and to the Trump administration. And that is the Trump entourage, Trump administration's, Trump personnel's associations going back at least a year, and quite possibly years, with Russian intelligence. We have to ask and have answers to the fundamental question that goes back to Watergate. What did he know? When did he know it? What did he do? And what did he seek to accomplish in doing that? But what did he know? When did he know it? With regard to Russian activities, his conversations, or the conversations of his entourage with Russians, that is the existential question for the administration and, frankly, for the United States.
That is Glenn Carl. He is a former CIA operative. He was speaking with my colleague, Lori London. This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all, from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. President Trump has said the idea behind his executive order closing U.S. borders to travelers from specific countries considered sources of terrorism was to prevent attacks on American soil. For now, that travel ban is on hold due to court actions. Meantime, a number of people disagree with Mr. Trump's premise about preventing terrorist attacks. Among forensic psychologists who study the motivations and backgrounds of mass killers, one leading authority says there are many factors apart from national origin that stimulate mass murderers. I report now from VOA's Carol Pearson.
Hold your candles for who we lost.
49 names, read at a vigil in Florida last year, identified the victims of the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, the slaughter at an Orlando nightclub. Children were among the 86 people killed in a murderous attack by a truck driver in Nice, France. 12 died in a mass shooting at the Navy Yard in Washington 4 years ago. Studies by the FBI, the Harvard School of Public Health, and others show the frequency of mass killings has tripled in the past few years. In the U.S., semi-automatic rifles are the killers' preferred weapons, but they also have used trucks filled with fertilizer, which can be detonated as a powerful explosive, as in Oklahoma City in 1995. In 2001, the weapons of terror were airplanes, commandeered by hijackers and deliberately flown into buildings in New York and Washington. J. Reed Malloy is a forensic psychologist who studies mass killings. He's also a professor of psychiatry at the University of California in San Diego. Malloy spoke to VOA via Skype.
But we find that these individuals typically have more in common than they do in terms of differences.
In an interview, Malloy said mass killers often have a history of psychiatric problems. They are mostly men. They have rocky, intimate relationships. And the killings are a quest for status, as in the Orlando nightclub shooting.
The individual also had some criminal background, and then he attempted to burnish, it appears, his reputation, perhaps inflate his notoriety by pledging allegiance during the mass murder itself to ideologically opposed groups, which was interesting in and of itself. He pledged allegiance to a Sunni group as well as to Hezbollah, which is Shia, and they, of course, have been at war for 1,300 years.
Malloy says even if killers claim to have a cause, that's not necessarily the reason for their actions.
Oftentimes, the pathway to violence begins with a personal grievance. And that grievance has three components to it. One is there's some kind of loss. Secondly, there's the feeling of humiliation. And then thirdly, there's anger toward and blaming of a person or a group of people that have caused them to have this problem.
Malloy says access to weapons enables these attacks, but the prospect of gaining attention on social media is another important factor motivating them. Social media can make a despicable attacker infamous, and when others see these killings, sometimes live streamed on social media, they want to imitate them. Malloy says people who experience violence are more likely to become violent. And finally, he calls easy access to social media a bad omen for the future, when he expects to see more mass killings throughout the world. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A new campaign has been launched to help end what's called hidden hunger. The effort is sponsored by the group Harvest Plus in recognition of the first observance of International Day of Women and Girls in Science. The initiative aims to empower women in Africa in combating hunger through science and the use of biofortified crops. Hidden hunger persists primarily in parts of developing countries that otherwise have access to ample food. Beb Posta is CEO of Harvest Plus. She speaks with VOA's Kim Lewis about the campaign and what it's doing to help women improve food security in their communities.
Much of our work is in Africa, and as you probably also know, that most farmers in Africa are women, as well as being mothers. Women are usually the primary caregivers for young children and infants, and they care deeply about the nutrition of their children, especially during the most critical phase of human growth. So that's why women are so important when improving nutrition.
And why does hidden hunger still persist, even though we know the earth produces enough food for everyone?
This is the sad truth about our world right now. More than 2 billion people are still suffering from this thing called hidden hunger. And it's called hidden hunger because you can't really see that someone is suffering from hidden hunger. They get enough food in their diets to make their bellies full, but they're just not getting enough nutrition. If you think about it, an interesting way to look at it is if you look at the color of the food on a plate in many African and diets, especially in the less developed countries in Africa, nutritionists tend to get worried when they just see a plate full of food that's mostly one color. A plate of ugali or fosho is just one color. And we know that when there's only one color on the plate, there's very rarely enough nutrition in there. And the reason we still haven't solved this problem is because of the way we produce food in the world. These staple crops are still very, very cheap. The rice, the maize, the sweet potato. The more nutritious crop that we need for a very diverse diet, like vegetables, fruit, and even things like eggs and protein food, they're just getting more and more expensive. So sadly, the gap is widening rather than closing. We really need to do something to help improve the nutrition of the staple crops themselves, and that's what we're doing.
The world will be observing International Day of Women and Girls in Science. So what role does science play in helping to empower women to help solve the problem of hidden hunger?
Well, this is the exciting thing about the human species. We're very, very innovative, and we can solve this problem through science, through good nutrition science, good agriculture science, and using economics to make sure that the science goes to the right people. And so what Harvest Plus is doing is working with scientists, and many of them are women around the world. We're working with nutritionists, crop breeders, and economists to find that special solution that allows us to get the plants to do the work for us, if you want.
Now, this is the biofortification program that you all are talking about.
Farmers in Africa, particularly women, have really taken the lead in growing and consuming these more nutritious staple foods. Mothers know the importance of having a healthy child who doesn't have to visit the village clinic every week. And the good thing about these crops, especially for things like vitamin A, orange sweet potato, and orange maize, the mothers can see the difference in the crop because it's orange instead of white, but they also see the difference in their children's health almost immediately. Within a week of feeding a child with these orange crops, the child has a reduction in night blindness, their eyesight improves, and within a month, we can record reduction in diarrheal diseases that still kill up to 2,000 children a day around the world.
When we're talking about women and girls in science, are we talking about them actually becoming scientists and working to help solve this problem of hidden hunger, or to actually using the science and technology to make it happen?
It's all of the above. First of all, as a scientist myself, I am passionate about encouraging more girls and women to become scientists. There's so many different fields of science. There's something for everyone out there. And we work with scientists all over Africa, and many of them are women. I've personally met scientists in Uganda, in Rwanda, in Kenya, Mozambique, and DR Congo. They are the most committed and enthusiastic. I just believe this is such an exciting week as we promote women and girls in science. And if you visit harvestplus.org, you'll be able to read about the first couple of scientists that we're profiling. There's some really amazing women and role models out there.
That is Bev Postma. She's CEO of Harvest Plus. She was speaking with Kim Lewis, host of the VOA program Africa News Tonight. It's time now to find out what's trending on social media. And here to fill us in on all of that, G. Abby Lee. Hey, G, what's happening?
Hi, Steve. The top trending story at this hour is President Trump's press conference. Many Twitter users are sharing quotes and clips from Thursday's event. And of particular interest was the interaction between the president and veteran White House correspondent April Ryan. She asked Mr. Trump if he would meet with the Congressional Black Caucus, and he said he would. But he also asked the African-American reporter if she would want to set up the meeting and whether they are friends of hers. Many took to social media to point out that suggesting all people of color know each other is not presidential. The Congressional Black Caucus at official CBC sent out this tweet. Hi, at Real Donald Trump. We are the CBC. We sent you a letter on January 19th, but you never wrote us back. Sad. And shared a link to the said letter.
And I have to say that I saw that Ryan is also actively retweeting tweets that show support for her. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, what else is trending, G?
People are sharing a photo of what Nutella, a popular chocolate spread, is made up of. From the photo initially tweeted by the insider, more than half of Nutella is sugar, and almost a quarter of the rest is palm oil. The Insider is a New York-based web publication, and while some people are asking why do delicious foods have to be so bad for you, others are saying they never thought of Nutella as health food to begin with.
Yes. I consider it more of a dessert, actually. Gee, what are people saying about the Day Without Immigrants protest?
People who are supporting the protests are sharing photos from businesses that didn't open for the day to show solidarity with immigrant workers. In D.C., many restaurants were closed Thursday, most notably the ones owned by celebrity chef Jose Andres. He emigrated from Spain. Steve?
And many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee, by the way. You can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. And our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Britain's National Health Service, the NHS, is undergoing some changes that will affect how patients pay for service. For UK citizens, healthcare remains free, but visitors can expect to start paying upfront for their healthcare needs. Professor Joseph Marion Thomas is a consultant oncologist.
We don't want overseas visitors who are not entitled to NHS care in the NHS, where they're taking up capacity which is already in short supply, and we know that most of them don't pay anyway.
Hospitals and doctors will have to determine if a patient is a citizen and then report that information to the NHS. Shyamantha Asokan with Charity Doctors of the World says doctors don't want to be border guards, so to speak.
It's just creating more work for NHS staff at a time when they're already incredibly overstretched.
Asylum seekers and refugees will continue getting care, but the new non-resident paying policy goes into effect in April. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. You know, Lady Gaga seems to be everywhere these days. She was at the Super Bowl, halftime performer there. She was at the Grammy Awards last weekend, now embarking on a new tour. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald has more on Lady Gaga's career resurgence with my colleague Jim Stevenson.
It's been a long time since I came around. Been a long time, but I'm back in town.
The Super Bowl was absolutely huge, but they wouldn't open the roof for the game. They opened it for Lady Gaga.
That shows you what kind of pulling power she has right now. That show pulled 117.5 million viewers for the Super Bowl halftime show on February 5th. That's the second most ever after Katy Perry in 2015, who drew 120 million. And Billboard reported that after the performance, sales of Lady Gaga's songs soared by 1,000%. And this is a really stunning career turnaround for Lady Gaga. You might remember back around 2012, 2013, her art pop album was coming out. And she was showing up with all this weird makeup and weird dresses, you know, the immortal meat dress. I mean, she was sort of taking her strangeness over the top. And I think people had enough of that.
It almost seemed like it was a bad Madonna wannabe.
Yes. As a matter of fact, Gaga and Madonna do not get along very well. It all started, I think, back in the days of her song Born This Way, which Madonna felt was a total ripoff of Express Yourself. That's in the past. Lady Gaga befriended Tony Bennett and went on tour and recorded with him. And little by little, she has rehabilitated her image, and she's come out with a really good album, Joanne. And now she's as hot as can be. This week, she released a video for her new single, John Wayne, and actor Bradley Cooper. He and Lady Gaga will co-star in the latest remake of A Star Is Born, which Gaga is doing the music for. The movie is scheduled to open in September 2018. Lady Gaga will start her world tour on August 1st in Vancouver, Canada. Right now, she'll be on the road into December. Next year, we should see dates in Australia and Asia, I would think. Lady Gaga is back in a big way, and she is going to be dominant probably for the rest of the year and possibly into 2018. And it's been a very well-managed career turnaround for her.
This really displays the versatility that she has. I mean, when we started really hearing the voice quality with Tony Bennett, she's an amazing singer.
She can do just about anything. And I thought the staging for the Super Bowl show was fantastic. It wasn't political. Lady Gaga said she wanted her performance to bring people together. She said, "I have been working on this performance since I was 4 years old." So she was ready to go, and she rocked the house.
It was an amazing performance, and amazing each week is our own Top 20 Countdown with Ray McDonald. You'll find it on VOA 1. Ray's also on Twitter
at Ray on the Hits, and you can access the entire music gang at VOA 1 The Hits on Facebook.
Always fun to hang out with him. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, Ray.
My pleasure, Jim.
Pure wild woman, don't you think? You know what? She's Juilliard educated, can you believe? And she wears meat dresses, or at least she did for a while. One other story for you here very quickly. Singer-songwriter Willie Nelson's feeling better now. He had a bad, bad cold, went on the stage last night, 83-year-old, performing at the San Antonio Stock Show and Rodeo. That is in the state of Texas. He missed three nights last week in California, as well as a couple of sets in New Mexico and Arizona on his current tour. His assistant says that had a terrible cold. That's basically what it was, and that he's getting a whole lot better. Nelson's set to release a new album this spring called God's Problem Child. He won a Grammy last weekend for Best Traditional Pop Volume, vocal album, that is, called Summertime, singing a bunch of Gershwin hits. Thanks for tuning in to The Voice of America. Good to have you with us today. Top world news is straight ahead. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is determined to disrupt the fundraising and support network of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. In pursuit of that goal, on January 10, 2017, the U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, designated four individuals as specially designated global terrorists, pursuant to Executive Order 13224, which targets terrorists and those providing support to terrorists or acts of terrorism. The individuals designated include ISIL members based in Iraq, Syria, and Indonesia who are involved in ISIL's propaganda, recruitment, and support networks in Southeast Asia and Australia. As a result of OFAC's actions, all property and interests in property of these individuals subject to U.S. jurisdiction are blocked, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in transactions with them. The first designee is Neil Christopher Prakash, who was named for acting for or on behalf of ISIL. He served as ISIL's most senior Australian recruiter and encouraged others to travel to Syria and Iraq to join ISIL. As of June 2015, Prakash was publicly identified as a top ISIL recruiter who facilitated the travel of new recruits, appeared in high-profile ISIL recruitment videos, and was named in a list of key contacts for aspiring ISIL foreign fighters. Khalid Sharouf is a Syria and Iraq-based ISIL member who has been involved in distributing propaganda and carrying out executions on behalf of ISIL. Barumsia Menor Usman is an ISIL official who commands ISIL fighters, facilitates funding for ISIL operations in Indonesia, recruits for ISIL, and coordinates travel and communications for ISIL members. Oman Rahman was designated for acting for or on behalf of ISIL in the areas of recruitment and media dissemination, and as of late 2015 was considered to be the de facto leader for all ISIL supporters in Indonesia, despite his incarceration in Indonesia since December 2010. These designations aim to cut off ISIL's access to the international financial system and support the global coalition's efforts to disrupt ISIL's finances and defeat the terrorist group. As ISIL seeks to recruit individuals around the world, the U.S. government will continue to target its enablers wherever they may be.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's